Orale! Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. This is your host, Jorge Martin. Familia! We are almost a month away from the NFL draft. Almost a month away. So, we're closing up the series. But first off, I want to make sure you're going to Familia FFP on YouTube. Hit that like, hit that subscribe. We got great, great, great content coming your way. And it's just highlighted by, we've got the exclamation mark on this one. I love, batting third. You guys know I love my baseball analogies. Batting third, you always got a heavy hitter going third. We're talking the quarterbacks today. And you know what? Like some people like to bring the band back together. Hey, we did that again. Mis amigos at football guys came through 3 for 3. You know, we got Kevin Coleman, batting third today. He is, he's one of the power trio over at the football guys dynasty football show. So love those guys. Mis amigos are doing great work there. They've already got that that NFL draft rookie guide. That's just fantastic. If you haven't downloaded it, you got to check it out. You subscribers, you've already got 2.0, and I know you've already gone through it because you know, Kevin, Jeff Bell, Christian Williams, all our amigos, they have been doing updates and they've got another update coming through. So, one thing I love about Kevin, he is West Coast, Best Coast. So, you know what? I love you guys, Christian and Jeff, but hey, we got the right time zone over here. So he's almost one of my foremost authorities when it comes to Michigan football. So there's going to be some good insight about a certain NFL quarterback that's coming in. So most important of all, Familia. He's a girl dad, also an assistant principal with those itty bitties, K-6. But hey, you know what? Let's bring him in. Mi amigo, Kevin Coleman. Kevin, bienvenido. Welcome. Thank you for joining. Muchas gracias.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it. Always love coming in here and chopping it up with you and talking quarterbacks. I think we talked quarterbacks last year, too, when we did this. And so it's always fun. I love, the hits, the misses, all of the above. And this class is a lot of fun. So I think it's exciting to kind of go over what we see. And yes, I've watched JJ McCarthy more than probably anybody. I don't want to say like anybody, but I've been watching him since high school. I watched his tape because I'm a Michigan guy and knew he was going to Michigan. I watched him at IMG. I watched him as junior when he wasn't at IMG. So I pretty much watch every ball thrown by JJ McCarthy his entire career, which hasn't been a lot, but I've seen him.
Yeah, I know we were talking about before the show, how, he was really good. Obviously 27-1 as a quarterback for the Wolverines the past couple of years, but, also he threw fewer passes than a couple of quarterbacks through total completion. So, yeah. So that was an interesting stat, but again, I found that in the rookie guide. So good stuff in there. So I think you are the only one that's watched every pass. Maybe him and his parents are the only ones who've been able to watch all. Yeah. And maybe Harbaugh is the other one. So, that's good company to keep. So, as I mentioned earlier, it's almost exactly 4 weeks until the NFL draft. We're kind of in silly season now. I think it's crazy. The combines are done. The bowl games are obviously there. The tape is there that people are going through, but now people are doing I think they're going silly right now. I mean, there some of the craziness that we see out there that I think people are creating news. I saw somebody in LA say that the Chargers should trade Justin Herbert and draft JJ McCarthy at number 5, which Dios mio, that's just don't get me started on that one. So I've heard crazy combinations of the top 3 quarterbacks, so many trade scenarios. We're kind of cutting through all the local speculation, but do you have a crazy rumor that you've heard out there recently?
Oh man, I heard the Justin Herbert one, which makes me laugh so much because I'm a Jim Harbaugh guy. And, I did see like somebody go out there and say that he didn't go to the Chargers for Justin Herbert. That is total crap. He's not dumb. He knows why he chose that location for Justin Herbert. Plus, Justin Herbert has like $108 million cap hit if he's cut or traded before July or June 1st or whatever it is. Like, it's not happening. Like, it's just not happening there. The thing that probably got me today, which I know I shouldn't, but I'm on break, so I'm on social media a little bit more today, is someone was saying that Trevor Lawrence, like if Caleb Williams turns out to be Trevor Lawrence, he's a bust. And because they were saying Trevor Lawrence is a bust. And while Trevor Lawrence may have not lived up to expectations so far of like being that Andrew Luck type prospect, if Trevor Lawrence went to the Bears and did what he's done in Jacksonville, he'd be the best Bears quarterback in the history of the Chicago Bears. So I think what you said is like silly season. I think a lot of we're bored. We're bored. And so you start seeing these takes fly off and you got to be very careful with how his takes go. And you just got to take your time and just kind of get through it, get through this next month. At least the Masters is coming up. So watch the Masters, March Madness, get yourself through it because yeah, tons of silliness out there and a lot of smoke screens. The Commanders saying they're going to move the second round, second pick, or possibly JJ's their guy or whatever. Like, I just feel like there's a lot of smoke screens out there and you got to be careful.
Yeah, that the New England Patriots may trade the number three pick and not draft a quarterback. So I think you always have to take shots at quarterback until you actually have that guy. So Trevor Lawrence has already got a 4,000 yard season under his belt, and no Bears quarterback has ever done that. So you're right. Trevor Lawrence, the book has not been written on him. I mean, we're in like on, you know, I don't think we're barely done with chapter two with him. So there's a lot of time. Plenty of time for that one. But, you know, speaking of which, you know, that class that he's in, those 2021 first rounders, you've already got three of the five first rounders that are already on their second team, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, and, you know, who knows, Zach Wilson may be on a second team before the next season rolls around. Lawrence is the only quote unquote established starter on the team, though he still has some miles to go before. But how much is this kind of like a cautionary tale for kind of like where the NFL is today, where, you know, it's like if you don't get it done quickly, they're going to move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, I think that there's a lot more pressure to win fast in NFL. And I think we saw where, you know, if you don't have an established quarterback, this is a quarterback driven league. And if you don't have an established quarterback, you're getting fired. Frank Reich got fired in 9 games or 10 games, whatever it was. And Bryce Young didn't look great. Right. You see these guys really struggle with these established quarterbacks. And because the fact of the matter is they got to beat Patrick Mahomes. And if you can't beat Patrick Mahomes, not winning a Super Bowl right now, like when you just look at kind of the landscape of it. So teams are very capped. And I think also the biggest thing is that teams realize now that they have to compete in that rookie quarterback contract window. And if they don't have a quarterback that's ready to go in that time frame, then it's like, oh my, we got to find somebody else. We got to go somewhere else. So it's more that analytics mode too. I think the analytics has kind of seeped into that. Like, hey, we got to find a guy. If we don't find him in 2 years, let's just move on. Let's cut him. Let's figure out where we can do that. So we're seeing that a lot. And that's why, like, a lot of these guys, even from last year, like Will Levis, he's on a 1-year deal right now. This year is like, if he does not do well, they're moving on next year. New coaching staff, he's done. Bryce Young, I think, is on a 1-year deal almost this year. Like, hey, you need to improve. You need to be better. If not, Dave Canales, we can go find someone. He changed Baker. He changed all these guys. Obviously can't fix you. So like, there is so much pressure with these guys that they're just cutting and going because coaches realize that, and you know, you've been around the sports a lot. You know, coaches, they're very self-preservation guys. They are going to preserve however they can, save face, whatever they do, and they're going to try to just keep their job. And I think that's what you're seeing right now with quarterbacks is that if they're not going to live up to those standards of trying to make at least competing with Patrick Mahomes' team in that window of that rookie contract, teams are like, I'm out. Because, like, look away. I mean, Dak may be asking for $200 million. Guaranteed in his next extension. That's what the money we're talking about right now. And that is crazy talk, but that's probably what they're going to get. And you can't, it's hard to compete with a Patrick Mahomes like that. That's just the reality of the landscape we're in.
And, you know, the crazy part is you know, I think people are overrating that rookie contract so much because, you know, when now what the Chiefs have won back-to-back Super Bowls with Patrick Mahomes getting top of the money, you know, top of the market money. But what they did was they were smart in the draft and they built a cheap defense around him. No, you got to know where you're going to spend your money and got to make sure you're spending it the right way. And then, you've got to keep hitting home runs in the draft. So,
well, having Patrick Mahomes doesn't hurt either.
Yeah, exactly. Cause I don't know about you. I don't know about you, man, but you know, against the Bills, I went against Mahomes. Against the Ravens, I went against Mahomes. When it came to the 49ers, it was like everything said the 49ers were the better team. I'm like, no, number 15. I'm going number 15 on that one. And it made me pretty smart on that one. So hopefully I may help people make some money. But no, you're right. He's Patrick freaking Mahomes. You know, it's like he's that dude. You know, he's LeBron. He's the new Brady. So, I do a baseball analogy, but, you know, right now, right. Yeah. Okay. He's Shohei. So, I don't want to, you know, kind of expose myself as a Dodger homer right off the bat, but hey, you know what? We'll see. But hey, you know, this class, though, is getting so much hype. When it comes to this 2024 class, how do you rank it with, you know, a couple of, you know, the 2020 class, which has a couple of hits in there, the 2021, which had a lot of expectation, but also hasn't really gotten the hits like that 2020 class?
I think that it could be, you know, I think the 2020 class is what has turned to be pretty good. Like when you're looking at like the hits that they have there, Joe Burrow, Herbert, Tua, Jordan Love has come on and now he's sitting there in that top 12 dynasty for fantasy mold right there. Jalen Hurts, that second round, right? Like those are five legitimate quarterbacks. Like that might be going down in this decade as being one of the better classes. And while those guys may never win a Super Bowl, I don't know. Sorry, Joe Burrow fans out there. Like I think at least he made a Super Bowl. So did Jalen Hurts. Just because that Patrick Mahomes guy on the other side, I think that class could go down as like one of the better ones. I think for this class, it's close to that. If JJ McCarthy can be that guy, right? That kind of guy that kind of comes there. I do think that has more depth. Like I think, I just had it too. I think the guy, like when you're looking at like, Jake Fromm. Jake Fromm was like, I think the sixth or seventh guy drafted. Jacob Eason, some of those guys. You know, those guys aren't moving the needle there, but in this class, there is some pretty good, because these guys are all old because of COVID, there's some pretty good value later around, like Michael Pratt from Tulane, a kid that I like a lot, Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., those guys, even Spencer Rattler's getting a little buzz out there. So like getting buzz from those deeper guys. So you might see some more backup types that have roles, has a pretty good career. Like you're like, oh wow, Rattler. Okay. He started for his fourth team in 10 years. Okay. Oh, I can plug him into my super flex, you know, this week or whatever. Like, I do think that there's some value to be had in this that has a lot of depth. And I think that is what makes this class kind of interesting.
Yeah. You mentioned Rattler. I mean, he had that beautiful pass in the Senior Bowl and I mean, maybe there's some perseverance that, you know, from, you know, being that guy coming out of his high school, senior high school class. And then all of a sudden he was the number one guy and now had some adversity. So, he could be that guy who's like a 10-year, he could be Jake Browning. So who played pretty well there at the end. So, well, you know what, let's get into this class. So, and you know what, not even going to sugarcoat it. Caleb Williams, I know in the rookie guide, you mentioned this is one of the best quarterback prospects, of the last decade, just a spectacular talent. I mean, I got to watch a lot of him being down here in Southern California. So he was on TV every week, and me being a UCLA fan, it wasn't always fun, but I do appreciate greatness. But the one thing about that, this season that's already been talked about so much, he had to play superhero because the line was doing him no favors and the defense was always giving up 30 plus points. So he had to play catch up ball, unless it was in Notre Dame, but we won't get into that one too much, but Caleb Williams, you know, he's going to be dissected so much, but it's phenomenal. The talent, how do you see his game translating to the NFL and potentially in that offensive environment and the worst kept secret of him possibly of him going to the Bears?
Yeah. You know, to me, my bad, my mic closed off there. To me, when you're looking at him just as a prospect, he's one of the better quarterbacks that we've seen. And so we talked about in the rookie guy, like he's one of those better quarterbacks that we have seen there. The Bears are amazing landing spot for a lot of reasons. So what I've done, because I actually went on with Heath Cummings today from CBS Fantasy, and we were talking about landing spots. And so what I did for that show is I ranked them because we kind of went through it, you know, I one thing that I do with these quarterbacks is I go through, and I started this a few years ago, and I see like, all right, when they get land on this team, when they go to the Bears, how do I rank their offensive line? So the Bears, I put 7 because I do think that they're doing some good things there. Defense, they have an amazing defense, which is going to put them in positive game scripts, which is good because you're not going to have a lot of like what you saw at USC. They were throwing the ball 40, 50 times a game because that defense was awful. That was one of the worst college defenses I've ever seen. I watch a lot of college football. And so he had to do a lot of that, like, you know, hero ball and all that. And he still looked great. So I think that the Bears are going to put him in a position where they don't have to, he doesn't have to hero ball it. He can if he needs to, but he's not going to have to. So I think that's going to limit some of those like mistakes that he had, those kind of those wonky throws, those like forcing throws. I don't think he's got to force it anymore. You have to love the weapons that he has there, you know, with Allen, DJ Moore, Cole Kmet. Even, you know, again, I think that just even the running backs, right? When we're thinking Swift, all those guys that are there, like that is a very, very solid, you know, talent based around Caleb Williams. That's going to allow him to make mistakes, but it won't kill his team. And it's going to put him in a way to have that competition there. And just force him to like, hey, you don't have to do it all here. Like you have all these guys around you. And the biggest thing is Shane Waldron. I think Shane Waldron is a very good development coach for the quarterback position. Look what he did with Geno Smith. He turned Geno Smith into a very serviceable quarterback, which is hard to do. Geno Smith struggled before he got to Seattle. So I think that they're going to put him in a very good position. They still have that 9th pick to kind of use however they want. Could be another weapon for him, maybe an offensive lineman. I love everything about Caleb, where he's going. And that's just on top. That's not even going through what he does well. Arm strength. He can make those throws that you like. Ball placement, accuracy. I think the biggest knock on Caleb that you're seeing right now, because it's silly season, is like the pink phone case that he had, or he paints.
Oh,
his
God.
And whether you want to talk about it or not, I think people are. So I think it's one of those things where you're like, hey, he can lead a team and he's going to be just fine. Because I, as someone who I just came from high school, I'm in that education mode. Kids are different now. And you know what, you old boomers, you're going to have to realize that is just the reality, because these kids are not like your old school quarterback. They're not your old school. Like, you know, they might paint their nails. They do. I have kids that paint their nails too. And they play football at the high school. Like that is just things that they do. Like, and that's just one of those things that you're going to have to realize. And I don't think it takes it away from Caleb Williams. I think he's going to be a fantastic quarterback. He has great leadership on that team already. So that's what probably makes me the most excited about Caleb Williams.
I know, you know, it's funny. I don't even think about his nails when I see him just kind of like, you know, scramble out of the pocket. All of a sudden, he's got a 6'3", 290-pound guy right in his face. He breaks out of the pocket, looks up and just fires the ball, just split second, hits a Brendan Rice or somebody, in the breadbasket for a 40 yards down the field that turns into an 80-yard bomb. So I saw so many of those plays. I don't care about that. You know what? It's one of those things, you know, if you could do that, Patrick, I wouldn't be surprised if Patrick Mahomes, paints his nails. I mean, who loves his Patrick Mahomes haircut anyway, except for him and maybe his wife. This guy is the truth. He's going in a great situation. I'm going to be very interested to see how he does from a clean pocket, because he didn't have so much of that this year. And that is going to be very important. And I love that he's getting Keenan Allen. And if they could get, so if you're sitting at number 9 and Roma Dunze falls, are you just running the card to the part, and you're the Bears and are you running that card to the commish?
You know, it really, to me, yeah, I think you have to, because I think if you're team building and you're looking at it, like Keenan Allen is probably a 1 year to maybe 2 year gap, depending on what that contract looks like. I mean, he's making a lot of money. So, you know, if you can get Roma Dunze sitting there with DJ Moore, I think that's a very good pairing. So, and you're not going to be in a position probably moving forward where you're a top 10 pick, right? So I do think that is there. The only other way I would go possibly is offensive tackle. If there is one of those guys that slips there, Olu, like one of those guys, that might be where I'm like, you know what? I think I can take another guy that can protect Caleb Williams. I see some talent at the wide receiver position, you know, some depth there in the second round, and that's where I'm going to go. I think that's the only way I think that they don't take a wide receiver there from.
And hey, Familia, if you go if you go into go back and listen to, if you haven't listened to it, or check out the episode with Jeff Bell where we talk about the wide receivers, there's going to be some talent there in the second round. Yeah. There's going to be some good guys there. So Jaden Daniels, he is, one of the most spectacular seasons that we've seen. Just an incredible talent, a dual threat. He's the true dual threat in this group. I love the touch. Sometimes he when I saw him throw, he kind of reminded me a little bit of Jalen Hurts in 2022, where it just seemed like the ball was on a string to AJ Brown and Devonta Smith. And obviously it helped that he had, Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. Just ready to, on the other side of those passes. So you get two future first round picks throwing it to you, but a great talent. I thought he ran a little bit recklessly. I thought he ran into contact that I didn't love to see. And I'm like, I want to play back what Trevor Lawrence told Anthony Richardson after the first game, that the hits add up at this level, and that they and to get down and protect yourself. But Jaden Daniels, and I've got an important question after yours, but Jaden Daniels, how do you see him at the next level? What are the things you love and maybe are worried about?
Yeah, just from like a quarterback. So notwithstanding like where he's going to go, because I do have question marks after, we know where the Bears landing spot is. I have Jaden is one of those guys. He needs to go to an air raid, aggressive shotgun kind of system. Like I don't know how comfortable I would be with Jaden Daniels in like, a West Coast style, because when you're looking at Jaden Daniels' strengths, deep ball accuracy and placement, getting the ball out quick, right? Has acceleration, rushing upside. Yes. He is, the thing that stands out about him, I think, and this has happened throughout his whole career, except for his last year with Arizona State, which was a dumpster fire with Herm Edwards. So you really can't use that season in 2021. And if you're on the West Coast, you know all about the Herm Edwards tenure at Arizona State. It was bad. So I don't really necessarily use that. He's always taken care of the football. Like when you're looking at outside of that year, he only, has 9 interceptions in the 4 years outside of that 1 year, he had 10. So like when you're looking at like what he's able to do, I think if he processes well, I think that he can he gets the ball out quick, does those things. The reason why I want him in like that kind of a system is I think this where he struggles is, his eyes tend to drop when there's pressure and he looks to run. So one thing that he's always kind of done this since even at Arizona State, he's a very he's not a run first guy. I don't want to put that narrative out there, but he is definitely like, oh, I have legs, I can go use them and get away from whatever pressure is coming at me. And we both know in the NFL, those holes close quick. And that where you see that. So I think that for him is going to be an adjustment. He's going to have to learn that. He's a very smart kid, though, when you're thinking of what he's able to do. And his development was great. I mean, look what he turned into after these 2 years at LSU. Mm-hmm. So you have to really like that. So I do think that mechanics are really good. He improved so much from his freshman year to now. Very compact, quick release, pretty good arm strength, gets it out quick. But my biggest concern about Jaden is where he lands. What is that scheme going to look like? And I think that's where like New England terrifies me for Jaden Daniels.
I totally agree. I totally agree, because we don't know that offensive environment. And you mentioned air raid. Do we know an offensive coordinator who's run the air raid possibly in, north, a little north of Virginia there?
Yeah.
Cliff Kingsbury. Could that be a happy marriage there in Washington?
I think that's the best fit for him. Because now I hate Kingsbury's offense. So this is like one of those things where like I've watched Kingsbury I've been diving into Kingsbury too. Athletic did a great piece on Kingsbury in terms of his offensive philosophy, but from all accounts, from all the writers, the Ringer podcast talked about this too when he got fired from Arizona. The last couple of years in Arizona, it was like a college scheme and NFL defenses had figured it out. And so my biggest concern is like, did he adapt? Is he adept enough to be like, I need to adapt this offense, I need to fix a little bit, or is he just going to run that same offense out there, right? That I think is the concern from a fantasy perspective. Yeah, throw Jaden in there, because I think that weapons, I like the weapons there with Scary Terry, Jahan, you know, those kind of weapons there. I think they've done good, you know, with Eckler and Brian Robinson, kind of, you know, targets in that range. That's probably the spot I like the most for him because I think it fits him well. My point to New England and why I worry about that spot is Alex Van Pelt's their offensive coordinator. Alex Van Pelt was not a good offensive coordinator. You know, when you look at what he did with Cleveland as well, when he was kind of developing there with, and I know Stefanski kind of runs the deal there, but they just did not look good. And he doesn't really have a track record of like, well, I really want him to build that quarterback. And I hate that they've got Mayo too. I'm not a big Mayo guy because I don't like the tree of Belichick with these guys, like, because they have that arrogance. You're already hearing it a little bit with Mayo. Like, you know, he's kind of being brushed with the media, those type of things. Like, and the weapons are nasty out there in New England. I don't want anything to do. So like that to me, like, you know, I don't think Jaden can overcome that. Like, I think Jaden, that would be a struggle for Jaden. And they've had struggle building and getting like weapons out there. And if they can't get weapons for Jaden, he just had Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. That is a stark difference to Demario Douglas, who I like, but you know, it's Demario Douglas and Juju and those guys that are out there. Like, it's just not to me, Kendrick Bourne, like those guys are, I think Kendrick Bourne's still there. I don't remember if he was.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. So like that to me is just Jaden. I don't know how much he can elevate those guys. You know what I mean? So that is, I think, my biggest concern there. Whereas the Commanders, he doesn't even have to really elevate those guys. They can probably put him into good spots and he just can flourish there.
Yeah, that one, oh God, that New England offense, it almost feels like I'd rather see the, I mean, please, Matt Harmon, don't cry, because I'd almost like to see them build out the, you know, the wide receiver and have Marvin Harrison, because that's actually Matt's worst nightmare, is to have Marvin Harrison end up in New England. So, because he wants to make sure ends up with a good quarterback. But yeah, when it comes to Jaden Daniels, God, I didn't want to see that. But I got an interesting question. So much of Dynasty has been talking about, like, the 102 and rookie drafts, where it's almost automatic to go Marvin Harrison Jr. Is there a scenario where Jaden Daniels could climb into that 102 with that rushing upside?
Sure. I think so. I think, you know, the reason why that scenario could be possible is if you really need a quarterback, like if you're sitting there and like you desperately need a quarterback and you're at the 102 and you look at next year's class, which is kind of down, the 25 class, not a lot of surefire guys. I mean, some people could definitely play better. Carson Beck, Shedeur Sanders, Jackson Dart, some of those guys might pop off and you're like, oh wow, like, hey, these guys are kind of up there. There's no clear-cut QB in the 25 class. So if you're sitting there at the 102 and you desperately need a quarterback, that might be like, hey, I like Jaden. I like that. I think you have some options to maybe move back a little bit if you wanted to. But that would probably be the only scenario. I'd have a hard time passing up Marvin Harrison Jr. even at the 102, yeah, to be honest with you. I would probably do whatever I could to maybe try to get back into that tier if I had some extra capital. I'd be working hard right now to get some extra capital to see if I can move up in that 105, 106 tier, maybe to take JJ or something like that to pair with Marvin Harrison Jr. But that would be the only scenario where if you really desperately need a quarterback, you know, like, hey, I like Jaden or Drake or whoever's in that range.
No, I love it. Love it. All right. Well, let's go over to Drake May, coming out of North Carolina, big arm of the guys who are likely to be drafted to become starters. I know Joe Milton has a ridiculous arm that could probably throw it from one goal line to the other one. But Drake May has special arm talent. I don't know for me personally if I put him in with Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Matthew Stafford, but I feel like he's mm-hmm, you know, kind of getting close. Didn't have great weapons this year. I think that kind of hurt him. But I mean, he's the prototype. You know, he's, you know, 6'3", 6'4", 230 pounds. He with the rocket for an arm. But is he going to be that guy at the next level? Even if he lands in New England, if he's the third one where, you know, maybe he doesn't have weapons. But first, let me know what you think of him as a quarterback prospect.
Yeah, Drake, you know, it's so funny because Drake has been going through the ringer a little bit out there in terms of, like, you know, people who like him, people who don't, and he's definitely getting that. As someone who does Devy or college football fantasy, I like Drake coming. Me and Christian Williams were pretty high on Drake as a freshman. And we were talking about Drake May as kind of being that guy. Like, hey, we like this kid. He didn't start as a freshman because he played behind Sam Howell. But we all just said, hey, he's the guy. And it was a little bit of a quarterback battle between Jacoby Criswell and Drake May his sophomore year. And me and Christian were like, nah, Drake May's the guy. And so we've kind of watched him and we've kind of looked at him as being that quarterback that we really liked. And he's developed a lot. You know, for me, the strengths for him is he's very scheme versatile. So I love Drake May in a West Coast. I like Drake May in air raid. He did play 90% of his snaps or something like that behind in a shotgun. So that's just typical college. It doesn't mean he can't play under center. But he's versatile because I think he can succeed in any offense. And he's smart enough to do so. So like his pre-snap reads and intelligence is the best of the quarterback class. So his ability to have pre-snap reads, I think, is better than Caleb. I think it's better than Jaden and JJ. I think that's where JJ also does well. But Drake is intelligent. So that, to me, that's a very positive kind of trait. Okay, hey, he can learn. He can kind of decipher. Now, Bryce was the same way last year, too. So Bryce had that same ability, but then he landed where he didn't land somewhere that I think people liked a lot more than it should have had with, you know, the Carolina Panthers. So that's the question, right? Like if he goes to Washington, I love it. Immediately, I think he does become like a QB 12 to 14 range in Dynasty just because I think they play to his strengths really well. Also, Drake, he can get into the numbers very quickly, but also in tight windows, you have to love that ball placement, everything there. The only thing that he doesn't do well, and this is a big red flag though, and I get subtweeted a lot about this because I bring it up a lot. Drake May struggles with his mechanics when he's under pressure. He does. And so his biggest thing, and you look at the PFF numbers, you go through it, like I've talked about it. When he is under pressure, he definitely struggles. So when facing pressure in 2023, he was 39 for 90, 43% completion percentage, only 600 yards, 7 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He had almost a 4% turnover-worthy play, according to PFF, and he took 28 sacks. He struggles when facing pressure. And I think, is the big thing for me, the red flag of like, all right, is he going to be able to develop that? Because we've seen, I've watched a ton of football. I am old, okay? We have seen quarterbacks who don't do well under pressure. And we've seen that, and they get the happy fee. He gets the happy fee. And what he does is it feels like almost when you watch him and he's under pressure, his top half and lower half get out of sync a lot. Like it's like, oh, he's rushing it. And he uses his arm strength and his ability at the top half to get the ball to where it needs to go. But sometimes that rushing it leads to those interceptions that you see. And he does have, 9 and 7 interceptions the last couple of years. So to me, even though he has that pre-snap intelligence, that reading defenses breaks down under pressure. And I think that to me is the number one red flag in his profile.
Yeah, I can see exactly what you're saying on that one, because that is, we've seen so many quarterbacks get destroyed because of the way they couldn't handle, defensive pressure. David Carr is the primary example right there. Mm-hmm. And, Sam Howell, by the end of the season, they didn't want to start him anymore because because of the way he was handling the pressure. So no, I get it. And I mean, yeah, no quarterback does well when they're under pressure. I mean, by the end, Tom Brady, he just, and if anybody even got on the other side of the line of scrimmage, he was throwing the ball away. So no, yeah. Send them my way. Send them my way. I'll talk to them about quarterbacks and not being able to handle pressure. So no, got to get him into a good situation, which, going into Washington, they're rebuilding. They got to rebuild their offensive line still. Yes. So that so much has to, become very important. New England, the same thing. So we'll see. I mean, but can you see him slipping past 3? I mean, hard to see him slipping past 3. I mean, there are some people who got him. I think it was Nate Tice has him as his 1A. With Caleb is 1B. So it's interesting. There are definitely some Drake May truthers out there. So
Brugler, Dane Brugler from the Athletic, he had May for a long time as his QB1. He's kind of flipped back and forth on that. I don't think there's always a QB that drops. We've watched the draft enough. There's always that guy that like, oh wow, he didn't go. I don't think May's that guy. If I had to pick who it's gonna be, I think it's Jaden. I think it's Jaden Daniels. I think Jaden's that guy, like, oh my gosh, he's dropping. Why is he dropping all of a sudden? And then someone maybe moves up in the top half of the 15 picks or whatever, like top 15, and grabs him in that 10 to 15 range. Or maybe he's sitting there with Minnesota and they're like, yeah, we'll take Jaden Daniels at 11. Like that, I think, is the guy that possibly has that most potential to drop. I don't think Drake May drops out of the top three.
No, he's too much of the prototype. He fits the suit. So he's that guy. He is that guy. All right. Well, we teased this at the beginning, JJ McCarthy. His special traits, you know, he's got the size. He bulked up a little bit. You know, I don't know. He had some extra tacos the morning of the weigh-in at the combine. So good for him. A little carne asada and a little al pastor always helps a little bit, but I mentioned it at the beginning. He has fewer pass attempts than the two guys we're talking about next. Bo Nix and Michael Penix have completions in the last season. So people haven't seen it, but you know there are things that you fall in love with when you watch him. I mean, so amigo, I'm giving you the floor. So like I said, his parents, Harbaugh, and you have watched more of his passes than anybody else. So I'm going to let you go for it.
So my comp for JJ coming into college. So I do these little comps. I did it for Fantasy Pros actually when I was with Fantasy Pros before I go to the football guys. Yeah. My comp for him was always Matthew Stafford. He reminded me a ton of Matthew Stafford. And really what he reminded me a ton of Matthew Stafford is because his arm talent. I thought he had the same arm talent as Matthew Stafford. Now he probably didn't develop that into what Georgia Matthew Stafford was a stud. I don't think people realize how good Georgia Matthew Stafford was. I don't know if JJ developed into quite that. But our comp for him in the rookie guy, which I think Christian nailed, is Alex Smith. I think that's a fair comp because of the rushing upside. Alex Smith had a very, very good rushing upside, even in college. Alex Smith was a dude at Utah. And so JJ to me is that mix between both of those guys. Now, I've watched him a long time, and I've had a love-hate relationship with JJ McCarthy in terms of like where I think he struggled sometimes is that he definitely does not know. I think he lacks touch at times. And so one thing that he does not do, I don't think he layers the ball very well at different areas of the field. Like his big thing was, I'm going to get this thing out as fast as possible. And you saw that. I was at the Rose Bowl this year with my wife. I went and watched the game, and you could really see it from the stance of like, you know, JJ made some amazing plays. That one that they threw the backwards pass to him and he hit Roman Wilson on the sideline. And it was an amazing athletic play. And then of 10 yard out and the dude throws it like 10 yards over his wide receiver's head. And so that is consistently what JJ is. He's maddeningly inconsistent. And I think, you know, what causes that, he definitely overstrides. I think that when he watches his mechanics, he can overstride a little bit. And it definitely, it's almost like shot putting, like he's trying to get the ball there too quick. And then that's when it leads to those errant throws. Not an amazing deep ball guy. I think he's more of that intermediate. When you're looking at the PFF numbers and where his balls go, intermediate is really where he thrives at, not deep. That's why I would love for him to find himself in like a Shanahan tree, McVay tree, like the slow lick guys out there. Like, just because I do think like a Purdy system would be good for him. Like, hey, this is where the ball is going. Hey, make the right read, understand where it's going. Cause that's where his strengths lie. Like, man, he is outstanding accuracy and ball placement in the intermediate range when he's on, when he's not rushed, when his mechanics are there. He knows where that ball is going. And you know what? All my analytics guys are going to hate me saying this. The dude's a big game guy, though. Like, he comes out and he can play. And he's beaten Ohio State those two times in a row. And even that first game they played, he came out there a couple series and looked pretty good. He won the national title for Michigan, beat an Alabama team that was very, very strong on defense.
Yeah.
And Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State probably wins the national title 2 years in a row if they didn't play Michigan, right? And I know they probably should have beat Georgia that year, and they would have won the national title. But JJ was big reason why they didn't. And I think, you know, Blake Corum was injured 2 years ago. This year, he had some very, very good tosses there. I think he has fun athleticism. So we're talking about, you know, upside for fantasy, a rushing ability. He's got it. He has it. He's not going to ever be like, he's not running out here and doing Lamar, but he can be functional like Alex Smith was and be in that range. I love JJ as a Michigan quarterback. My biggest concern with JJ McCarthy is always going to be that he has the highest ceiling of probably everybody in this class. He also has the lowest floor. I always say that, you know, he could be what we thought Daniel Jones was, like, going to be. If he's like great Daniel Jones, that's a very solid QB1 in fantasy, and he can be very good in terms of, like, hey, just being a very solid QB. But he could also be Desmond Ridder, in my opinion. Like, he could just be that, oh my gosh, he has athleticism and upside, but he makes mistakes. Why does he keep making these mistakes? So JJ's landing spot out of all of these guys is the most important. JJ needs to go to a coaching staff that is built for him. So, like, I always mention this because, honestly, it just stuck with me when I listened. I listened to Move the Sticks podcast with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. I love those guys. And you know, Daniel Jeremiah, a few years ago, he talked about this, on a podcast. I still remember. He said, bad teams pick good players in the draft without a plan for them. Great teams pick players in the draft with a plan for them. And he always mentions, like, all right, if we pick this guy, what are we doing? How do we build this kid up? And not all teams do that, right? I think that's one reason why, like, Trey Lance struggled, because I don't think they really had a plan for him. They just wanted to go get a quarterback like him and said, hey, we'll throw him in there. He's in my system. Shanahan probably is like, he's in my system. And they didn't really tailor it to Trey Lance. JJ is that same thing. Like, okay, you draft him. All right, why don't you go see what made him successful in Michigan? What did he do? How did you build around him? What kind of pieces does he need? There's still upside, though, there, because, you know, he had Roman Wilson, who's fine. Cornelius Johnson, who's fine, but he never had dudes, right? So if you give him a Justin Jefferson, we still don't know what that's going to look like. He never had an athlete level like that. So that's where, like, that ceiling comes in, where you're like, yeah, he could be a legitimate quarterback one, if he gets those pieces. But to me, I mean, I know it sounds lazy, but the narrative should be, if JJ goes to the Vikings with, you know, with their head coach, the system, the weapons there, they have the best weapons. That's the best landing spot for a quarterback. Then JJ might be a 102. You might want to be like, yeah, I'll put him at the 102, 103 mark in my drafts, because I love that situation. The quarterback situation matters so much. That's really where it comes down with JJ to me.
Oh, that's awesome. And Kevin O'Connell from the McVay Shanahan coaching tree. So right there. So everything would be set up, plus in getting to pitch the ball indoors too. So that can never be discounted too much. So getting, you know, I mean, I know he'd have to play in Green Bay and Chicago from time to time, but time to time in weather, but no, you know, getting those home games in Minnesota would be just so key. So I love the Alex Smith comp. He almost, like, he's a bigger, taller version of Alex Smith. So love it. All right. Well, I know those are the locked and loaded four guys that we know are going to be in the first round. A couple guys have been talked about possibly in the first round. I'm going to go Bo Nix, staying out here on the West Coast. These next two are going to be Pac-12 guys. You know, doesn't have the big arm like a Drake May or JJ McCarthy, but great accuracy. Where could he succeed? Where could he thrive?
So, you know, with Bo, probably a spread type offense, some RPO stuff that you got in there. Bo is Derek Carr. It's just so easy to say. He's going to be like that quarterback that could possibly start somewhere. Like, if a quarterback needy team, to me, like, he's a mix of Baker and Derek Carr type that, like, hey, yeah, you know what? He could throw off platform. He's got good velocity. He's a high-level athlete. This kid came in as QB1 of his draft class in 2019. People forget that. Like, he was number one quarterback there. He's a legacy kid that went to Auburn. Really good ball placement, too. So, like, those things that you have to love. The kid threw for 4,500 yards last year. Like, he definitely has the production there. The problem with Bo, and the big red flag when you look at his numbers, especially on PFF, the dude doesn't throw across the middle at all. Like, I don't know what it is, but and you have to operate across the middle in the NFL. So my big red flag with Bo Nix is, you know, why wasn't he operating across the middle? Does he struggle with anticipation? Does he struggle with, cause he did at Auburn, that went away at Oregon, but their system was very perimeter based on the sidelines. You saw if you watch Troy Franklin highlights, everything is on the sideline. Everything is there. And the reason why is because there's not a ton over the middle. The only time they really went over the middle was to Tez Johnson, who is their small 155 pound wide receiver, and it was very quick outs, like quick slants, those type of things. So my big thing for Bo is like, why wasn't he operating over the middle, right? Why wasn't he doing that? And very run pass option schemes that they were running there, a lot of concepts. So he's definitely got to learn NFL offenses, which is something that, hey, can he do that? Because he struggled with that at Auburn. Auburn did try to run some NFL offense schemes with Gus Malzahn, and he didn't do well with that. So for me, Bo can be a very serviceable backup quarterback that can come in and just play. Like, I don't think a team would ever be like, yeah, that's our franchise guy. But I think the thing with these guys, these second level quarterbacks, is that a lot of teams need some quarterbacks right now, right? And so this quarterback needy teams. So they're going to find a role, right? And that's where if Bo or Michael Penix Jr., even Michael Pratt from Tulane, those guys, they find a landing spot where like they can compete for QB1 kind of right away. Like, let's say the Giants, or let's say maybe the Jets. Maybe one of these guys goes to the Jets. They sit behind Aaron Rodgers for a year or two, and maybe that's the kind of that role that they have there. The Raiders, possibly, right? Like, hey, they go there. Whoever's there, Aiden O'Connell, if you want to go on that train, you can again. And you just sit for a few weeks, and then, okay, you bounce back. They are going to find a role. Bo's going to find a role. He'll be a backup. There's no doubt in my mind that Bo Nix would be a backup for 10 years. Upside as a starter, don't see a ton of it, but he'll definitely start some games in the NFL.
No, it's interesting. I feel like the Drew Brees comps have been a little bit overheated, man, on that one. So
a little bit, like, yeah.
I mean, I know the throwing motion, there's some similarity there, but no, I can't. No, I can't go there. Just can't do it. No, yeah, it's forced. It's so forced. The next guy is one that it feels polarizing. Michael Penix Jr. I mean, just had a brilliant last two seasons at Washington. I think I don't know if it was you who wrote the line, but using the Bookie Brooks line, he's not a truck, but he's a trailer. and definitely he trailed, you know, with Roma Dunze and he had NFL receivers there, and he just a great play caller. Does it feel like everything has to be perfect for him to succeed in the NFL, considering in his history?
Yes, it has to be perfect. And I think that's you hit it on the head. He had the best wide receiver room in the country. I want people to know this. This year, Washington had the three best wide receivers. Now, Jalen McMillan wasn't healthy-ish. He was kind of banged up in the middle of the year, towards the middle of the year. But him, Polk, and Onunze were the three best wide receivers in college football this year. I will go to bat against anybody that says otherwise. Even Ohio State. Ohio State's wide receiver struggled this year. I think that he had that. Also, you know who's the number one offensive line rated in the college football? Washington. Mm-hmm. Washington was the number one offensive line. They never touched him. You know the one team that touched him? Michigan. What's the game that he struggled the most? Michigan. So to me, I think that everything's got to align for him. And I like him as he's a great story. He comes back from the injuries that he's had, all of that. He has two ACL tears, two shoulder surgeries too. Like, those things to me, like, that's not insignificant, especially with how old he is. He played 6 years. He was a 2018 class. So when you're thinking of that, he's an older prospect too. And he can flourish. He can do those type of things. But again, like, he, you know, injury concerns, mechanics, really not great. Michael Penix Jr.'s biggest problem is that his mechanics aren't there. Not a ton of mobility either. I don't think he has very good functional athleticism. And he got banged up a lot this year, even with a good offensive line. Like, he struggled in that Oregon game. He was banged up the first time they played. He got a little healthier towards the playoff because they had that month-long stretch off there. I just don't know if he can withstand an NFL beating. Like, I just don't know if he could do it. And so I'm pretty out of Michael Penix Jr. in terms of like drafting him, because he's still going way too high for me, like mid-second round, and that's before possibly going in the late first. I don't know if he's going to slip in the late first. I'd be surprised if he does. I think he's more of a day two guy. But to me, he's not worth the risk. I will rate to the third and fourth round, take another shot one of these deeper guys like Pratt or Rattler or one of those guys, rather than Michael Penix Jr., because I just don't think the ceiling's there.
I mean, I love, yeah. I loved what I saw of him, especially, I know he got banged up a little bit, but, he really showed up against the two Oregon games and then against Texas in the college. People were blowing their minds out. They're going crazy. They were going loco talking about him, as a top 10 pick after the college, and then after the semifinal. And then all of a sudden when he's facing an NFL defense, that's what it's going to look like. So, he looked very average that day. So it was tough. It's tough to get too overhyped on him. On guys we haven't talked about, any quick hits on anybody, that could possibly in the right situation, or maybe looking at a backup career?
Yeah, Michael Pratt. I'm going to continue just to talk about Michael Pratt. I like Michael Pratt a lot from Tulane. When he had a really good year the year prior, his junior year, he's a little banged up this last year, but he had 3,000 yards his junior year in 2022, 27 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. So what you're looking for in these late round guys is, can they come in and play, and will a team kind of be like, yeah, he can kind of build around him or whatever the case may be. Timing anticipation, really good for Pratt. He does that well. Good arm strength, good enough to get in the tight windows. Really good placement. He is one of those guys that won't blow you away athletically, but he's got a little functional athleticism. He can move a little bit. And he's one of those guys that teams are like, yeah, backup for sure. I think Michael Pratt is definitely one of those guys that can be a backup. But of those guys that are like, hey, will they fill in? I think he's much better than Aiden O'Connell ever was. I think Clayton Tune, he's much better than him. And these guys all started this last year. Like, Michael Pratt definitely can find a role. He's basically free right now. So I did a draft today, a real draft. I was in a real rookie draft, and it ended today. Excuse me. Michael Pratt was the last pick by me at the 412. So I grabbed him at the 412 because I'm like, hey, that's free money to me in Superflex value. So, like, Michael going free in that range, I like him. Spencer Rather's interesting. My big thing with Spencer, I saw someone say he's a first round pick today, and that's scary. We're silly season right now. That's where we're at with silly season. I don't know if he's first round. He has first round tools, but the problem with Spencer was never his tools. It's his head. He's a nutcase sometimes. And I think that's, like, he has attitude questions, incidents, struggles to avoid sacks, those type of things. I think he has tools. I think he's fun. I don't know how much I love the fact that, like, he's getting first round buzz, which I don't think it's going to be. But if he can go to, like, the Falcons, sit behind Kirk Cousins for a couple years, maybe take a shot at him after that. Like, there's some value to be had if he can sit for a couple years.
No, I love it. Love it. Is Joel Milton going to get drafted?
I don't know. That arm will probably get him drafted in the fifth or sixth round. I think we have sixth round. I don't want anything to do with Joe Milton. I watched Joe Milton in Michigan. I watched him at Tennessee. Arm strength is ridiculous, but he doesn't do anything else well. So, like, that's the big thing with Joe Milton.
I hear you on that one. Yeah. I mean, there are certain things that you love to see, but, it's like a guy who can dunk all day long in the NBA, but that's all they can do. So yeah, that the one trick pony doesn't really work in the NFL. So I wanted to see if we could do some quick hits on the year two quarterbacks. And Bryce Young was somebody that we both really liked last year when we talked. I was listening back to the episode last year. Mm-hmm. Are they starting to kind of do the things that maybe they, being the Carolina Panthers, to kind of get a reset for him? Any hope for him?
I just wrote an article for Football Guys. It's coming out tomorrow. It's on the riskiest dynasty quarterbacks right now. So I kind of went through all the quarterbacks. I wrote about five of the most, riskiest. And who made the list? Bryce Young. And so I really dived in to his upcoming season, right? Didn't do great last year. QB 39, 10 fantasy points per game. Awful. Now that he has Dave Canales there, I think that there's a chance. And I think that when you're looking at what he was able to do, so he served as the passing game coordinator in Russell Wilson's best career year. 2022, he helped Geno Smith. Last year, he helped Baker. The thing about Canales' offense, a lot of it is not predetermined, like, hey, you need to throw it here, or hey, this is your XYZ. He doesn't actually label his wide receivers. He just puts them in spots to succeed. And I thought that was interesting because they went out and got Deontay Johnson now. So if you have Deontay and those guys there, and I still think they're going to add weapons in the draft, I have more of a positive and it's hard because I love Bryce Young just as a kid, cause he's from California, and you know, like I just have this California thing where I'm like, hey, I want these guys to succeed. And I know that's not good to say, but you know what? I don't care. Cause I do this for a hobby, and I take it very seriously, but I also I like rooting for kids. My big thing is I'm rooting for Bryce Young. I think they finally are looked at it and said, okay, we got to build around somebody. They picked the perfect coach to do that with. They're finally kind of go out and get Deontay Johnson, the system that they're in. My big thing, the risk that I put in the risk area for him is David Tepper is still the owner. That's a problem because if he has a bad year again, like I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, he has bad 9-10 games. Is Tepper going to cut the plug and say, nope, we're going to go somewhere else? You know, because he's probably going to do that. And that is a big, big concern. Bryce has to have a very good 10, 11 early games there to see kind of how he's doing. Or he might be on another team. We could talk about him as like the Justin Fields type trajectory, which is not something that you want. But they are starting to finally build around him a little bit. You want to hope it's because of Frank Reich's offense and all that kind of stuff that was going on there. But it could just be that Bryce can't play at this level too. And I think that's something you have to mention.
Yeah. I mean, I'm rooting for him too. Want to see it work, and build that line too. Build that line, get it going.
Because he was getting just destroyed out there. Like there was tons of dropbacks where he had no time at all.
And exactly like what you were saying earlier, when a quarterback's struggling with no, when they're under pressure, but yeah, there's pressure and there's just a time where there's just no chance there where you're just going to get obliterated no matter what. So, now from the valley to the peak, CJ Stroud was sublime, was fantastic. Kind of the way he's being talked about really reminds me so much of Justin Herbert going into his year 22, which is year two in 2021, which happened to be his 5,000 yard season. But can CJ Stroud kind of be suffering from overhype going into the season?
No, I don't think so.
I love it. Yes.
He's so good, man. And I liked CJ Stroud too. Like last year I was like, man, I don't know if we've seen like his ceiling yet. But the thing is, unlike Carolina, Houston built around this kid and they have Slowick there. Now, the one thing I will say, and Jason Wood, he's an OG at Football Guys. He's an old analyst and he's been there forever. I love the guy to death. He always talks about though, that you have to be concerned with quarterbacks whose offensive coordinators are going to get a job somewhere else. And they have a defensive-minded head coach. And he's right here because Bobby Slowick was possibly going to the Panthers this year. Like there was opportunities for him to go. He'll probably get a head coaching job next year. So the biggest thing that could happen with CJ is that, you know, his offensive coordinator leaves. They don't promote within. I think they will. They'll probably find someone that kind of fills that role with them. And he still has – D'Amico Ryan still has connections with the 49ers. So there's still a chance that he's going to get someone that is similar. But that, I think, is the only concern I have is, like, how much would a change at the offensive coordinator spot matter? Now, they're going for it, though, the next couple of years. They're really building for that. They're going for a Super Bowl run. Now, the free agency, everything they've used there. But from a play, not worried at all. From a system, that's where I think the concern should be.
No, I love it. Plus, California kid makes California. We're rooting for him. We're rooting for him big time. Anthony Richardson, is it just we just want to see a healthy season, right?
Yeah. Really, that's really what it is with him. I put him on my article too. I said, hey, like he is risky because like the injuries and everything there, but the dude was QB4 the 2 weeks that he was out there, QB1 and QB4. So the value's there. Shane Steichen, you have to love that. Risk really where it comes down to. So, and I put this in, I'll just talk about it. But since 2008 draft, 7 quarterbacks have been drafted in the first round with fewer than 20 collegiate starts. And Richardson was at 13. So it's Trey Lance, did not pan out. Mac Jones, did not pan out. Kyler Murray, panned out. That's fine. Dwayne Haskins, did not pan out. Mitch Trubisky, did not pan out. Ryan Tannehill, he was a wide receiver in college. So, like, I don't know how we're going to qualify that, but he technically panned out a little bit. And he had Mark Sanchez. So when you're looking at that list of guys that had under 20 starts, that's not, there's risks there involved, right? Like, now Anthony Richardson is a better athlete than all of those guys. And he has the frame, and he has Shane Steichen, which I said is really important there. So I do think that there's tons of risk, but I'm buying the risk. Like, I think that I love the idea of going out there and getting Anthony Richardson in dynasty right now, especially with them prioritizing Michael Pittman, probably going to draft a wide receiver, maybe get tight end Brock Bowers, I think, is in play at 15 if he falls. So that is where the value is at. I'm on board there. But yeah, there's a little bit of risk involved with Anthony Richardson. He's got to get out there. He's got to play a full season. You got to get out there and play.
Yeah, you got to get out there and play. You got to be healthy. You got to learn how to slide. Kind of, you know, Dr. Owen Porras and I, he's one of the guys we're going to dive into in the coming weeks and months, talking about what he needs to do. But, you know, Edwin even said, you know, there were times that he wanted to see him slide, you know, just, you know, kind of sit, get down. So, yeah, definitely want to see that. But he's starting to throw, which is a good thing. So it looks like the physical recovery is there. So last one. Will Levis, they just added Calvin Ridley. They still have DeAndre Hopkins. There's talk that they're going to be, you know, work on the line some more in the NFL draft. But I mean, there were some hero plays for him, but there were also some points where there were some head scratchers, which you see from a rookie. But
yeah,
hope for him.
Yeah, he's a tough one because he's only on that 4-year deal because he wasn't drafted in the first round. So the way I look at him is this is his year. This is his year. So there's always hope because they built, you know, I think the biggest positive, they have Brian Callahan there as their head coach now. So with Brian Callahan coming over from the Bengals, you saw what he's able to do. And he's going to be more probably a pass-friendly scheme in terms of what they were able to do there. Going to get Ridley probably shows that. DeAndre is there. I don't love Calvin Ridley though. I mean, I know they said he's going to use him all over the field and yay, that's great. But like, we've seen that version of Calvin Ridley. He hasn't looked great doing that. So, you know, Chig is okay at tight end. I love Tajay Spears, but then Pollard kind of throws in there. It's a really hodgepodge of kind of areas there. And I know people thought maybe they were going to add like an offensive weapon at 7. They're going to add a tackle. They got to build that up. That offensive line is bad. So I think that there's hope. But he's got the biggest hill to climb, even over Bryce, I think, because that 4-year contract makes his window. This coaching staff did not draft him. So, you know, that like they're looking at it like, all right, we'll see what we got for a year. But if we got to cut ties, we'll cut ties and get somebody, our guy next year, possibly, or go out in free agency. I mean, there's a possibility Dak Prescott's going to be a free agent after that. You know, the Cowboys said that the deal is kind of, they don't know what's going on there. I think we're going to see that a little bit more with the cap going up. Some of these mid-tier veteran guys, like the Cousins types, the Dax types, those type of guys, they might be on the market soon. And maybe the Titans are like, oh, I'd rather not. Callahan might be like, I'd rather go with this guy rather than Levis. And that's where the concern probably is. This is a huge year for him. This is basically his make or break year in the NFL, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, and especially as we were talking about the 2021 class, I mean, he could just be if he doesn't pan out, yeah, you know what, it's back, it's gonna be going for the backup city. So, amigo, we did it. Awesome, just absolutely fantastic. Last one, you know, we always close up with a little food talk, a little Mexican food talk. Any recent discoveries or any personal favorites that you want to share with the Familia community?
I just eat the same tacos from the same place my whole life. That's really where I eat.
I love it.
So me and my wife, we will go. It's so funny because when we used to live in this other town, we lived in Los Banos is what they call it. I don't live there anymore. We used to go to this little Mexican restaurant, El Rodeo, which is my favorite Mexican restaurant ever. It's in town, and get the Al Pastor nachos. We used to split them all the time. But we hadn't been there for a few years together because we moved outside. But we were there the other day, and we used to go see that. You know how you see that same waitress all the time? And it's so funny how, like, and she's been there for years. And so we went there. I mean, we were going there, 11 years ago. We went there for like six straight years, like once a week at least, or maybe once every couple of weeks. And then we hadn't been back there. She's seen our kid, one of our kids. She thought we had one. So we walked in with three kids and she was like, "What is this? What happened? How did you have all these kids?" And then the El Pastor nachos is kind of what we usually get there. Or I'll get the tacos. I get the Pastor tacos over here off of by my house. And that's really all I stand there.
Oh, love it. Love it. Oh, that's fantastic, mi amigo. If it wasn't after dinner, I'd be hungry right now. Mi amigo, please pump anything you got.
Yeah. Big thing is, we do the Dynasty Football Guys show, that we've been really, we've been having for less than a year, over there at Football Guys, but the numbers have been really great. And so we're really thankful for that. The downloads and all the listens. And if you like Dynasty Football, the rookie talk, all of that, you can go find us over there at footballguys.com at Dynasty or iTunes or Spotify and all that. Take a look there. We do Deviant and some other stuff, college football stuff, at our Patreon, the Devi Royale Patreon. And we're expanding a little bit there as much as we can. But mostly you can find my work at Football Guys, have articles coming out when I find the time to write articles. I found some time this week, so I do have one coming out tomorrow you can take a look at, or whenever you listen to us at footballguys.com, Kevin Coleman.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Yeah, Miguel, thank you so much for doing this. And muchas gracias, everybody, for joining us. Also, once again, make sure you're going to Familia FFB on YouTube. Hit that like, hit that subscribe, get the great content, just like you're getting here with Kevin Coleman. And also make sure you're also subscribing over to the Injury Prone Podcast, because Edwin and I are going to be having some content there. So you can find me at Jorge Martin 17 on Twitter, right here, just like you see it, and pushing all the content out there right there. So everybody, familia, hope you enjoyed this episode. Muchas gracias for joining us. And remember, todos somos familia. Salud.